This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing, and signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial. And we're joined by Robin Pogrebin. She is a stellar reporter for the New York Times on the Culture Desk, where she covers the art world and cultural institutions. And she ventured out in a big way by covering the confirmation process of Brett Kavanaugh last year. And the Supreme Court justice remains a polarizing figure in American life. Her book, along with Kate Kelly, is The Education of Brett Kavanaugh, an Investigation. In September of last year, the FBI was given 1 week to investigate charges against Brett Kavanaugh before he was sworn into a lifetime position as the newest associate justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. After the confirmation process that was widely considered a low for the country, many questions remain unanswered, leaving millions of Americans unsatisfied. And good morning to you, Robin Pogrebin.
Good morning to you.
Well, it's a story that has everything, and the nation was captivated, probably more so for this confirmation than any time since Clarence Thomas in 1991. And like Clarence Thomas, you, along with Kate Kelly, Robin Pogrebin, you note that there are many questions that remain unresolved. What are the principal questions that you see that are still lurking out there about this gentleman who is on the court for life?
Well, I think a lot of people were left feeling like threads were dangling in terms of this FBI investigation. It had been called for kind of at the last minute, and it only lasted a week. It was circumscribed. It was fast-tracked. And as to what the FBI concluded, that was a confidential report that the public never saw, so they didn't really understand the findings or the scope or who directed that inquiry. So we looked back at that and how it came about and what some of those the results were and how people on both sides of the aisle felt about that in the end. We also fleshed out the Deborah Ramirez allegations. This was a classmate of Brett Kavanaugh's at Yale who alleged that freshman year he had exposed himself to her at a freshman year dorm party where everybody was very drunk, and that we felt her allegations had kind of been sort of passed over. She never testified publicly. Her charges were lumped in with several others that had less credence to them as kind of piling on by the Democrats in the view of Republicans. So we were able to go back at her story and find what kind of contemporaneous corroboration there was around that. And we also looked at whether there were any other allegations that hadn't surfaced. And we did find one from college years, also a freshman year dorm party, where Brett Kavanaugh allegedly exposed himself to yet another student the same year. But we also found that in the 36 years since, he arguably has become a very different person, either because he matured or saw the error of his ways or simply became a more serious person who was interested in developing his career and has, by most accounts, upstanding conduct.
The book is The Education of Brett Kavanaugh from Kate Kelly and Robin Pogrebin. Robin is our guest, and it has new information, and some believe this is a story that should go away. Others believe it's just cracked the surface. You have details on reports that Justice Kavanaugh preemptively reached out to Yale classmates before the story about Deborah Ramirez. What happened there?
We have some classmates who are alleging this. You know, whether or not it took place is not, you know, absolutely definite. But we do have some text exchanges among friends. It was clear that Yale classmates were starting to talk about this Deborah Ramirez incident even before they surfaced publicly. And there was some indication that classmates point to that when The New Yorker was originally working on its story about Deborah Ramirez, where they revealed her allegations for the first time, that Brett Kavanaugh was reaching out to classmates or people were reaching out on his behalf, on his team, to try to deflect them and say, don't say anything bad about this. So there was some concern that Judge Kavanaugh was anticipating this account coming to light.
Now, there was an October 2018 Georgetown Prep alumni reunion, which Brett Kavanaugh, now Justice Kavanaugh, attended a year ago. And you have some nuggets that are interesting regarding that. What happened here?
Well, I think after the hearings, as you mentioned, this was so polarizing, and it really spoke to this political moment in our country where people saw in this story what they wanted to see. There were some, you know, the left portrayed Judge Kavanaugh as kind of this embodiment of white male privilege and entitlement. They assumed he was a sexual predator and that this was a right-wing ideologue. There were Republicans who saw him as a man who had kind of been railroaded in this process, who had been accused of doing things between the ages of 17 and 19 that were sort of technically uncorroborated, and that he was having his life and his career dragged through the mud and potentially ruined by these allegations. So you had kind of both types of people at this Georgetown reunion. There is a sense of pride around their alumni, and certainly he has been one of the more prominent people to come out of that school. And so there was, I think, a groundswell of support for him. But there were also those at the reunion who questioned whether these allegations were true, who remembered perhaps the day those years of the 80s when alcohol flowed freely at parties, parents looked the other way, and perhaps, as one classmate described to us for our book, there was a culture of casual misogyny that perhaps informed the experiences that Kavanaugh had there.
New allegations against Kavanaugh from a third woman, Tracy Harmon Joyce, have surfaced, and you're right there. Your book is the first to report this. What about this third woman who claims that she also was abused by Justice Kavanaugh?
Well, it's important to note that she has not claimed that herself. She's told friends, actually, that she doesn't remember it. It was a very drunken party, so it's conceivable that it is not part of her memory. However, we do have, for the first time, an eyewitness, a guy named Max Steyer, who was a classmate at the time. He now heads and founded a good government organization in Washington, D.C., that kind of prides itself on its bipartisanship. He was featured in Michael Lewis's book, The Fifth Risk. And he remembers clearly seeing Brett Kavanaugh expose himself to this other classmate freshman year at yet another party. And it was meaningful, and we included it because it backs up and sort of resonates with the Deborah Ramirez story. It is a very similar incident in the same year and the same time. But also because Max Steyer brought that story, those allegations, to the FBI, as well as several senators at the time a year ago. And those charges were never pursued. And so it was meaningful in terms of trying to understand how in-depth this process was, which leads were followed up on and which were abandoned.
What is your take, Robin, about Christine Blasey Ford? She made a decision to testify, apparently did not want to, gave what some thought was a compelling performance, but yet has been vilified by supporters of Justice Kavanaugh, not all, but many supporters of the justice. It seems that based on that others in the future, and there will be a future, would be reluctant to come forward.
I think the legacy of Christine Blasey Ford is very much up for debate. There are those who argue that she was the kind of pinnacle of the Me Too movement, that she embodied a kind of courage in ultimately telling her story to the world. As you noted, she did not intend to be public about this. She went to great lengths to try to remain confidential, and her story leaked out, and once it did, she felt she needed to tell it herself. But she, just like Deborah Ramirez, did not intend to bring these allegations forward and put her face to them. That said, I think there is this underbelly where, you know, the response she received was quite negative in other ways. She's had death threats. She's had to move her family around multiple times. She's no longer teaching still, which was her first love, and has had her life upended by this. And I think the takeaway is definitively mixed. Hopefully there is a sense that women will understand that it's important to bring these stories to light. But on the other hand, there's a very high price to pay.
Now, the justice is there for life, barring something unforeseen, and he is a conservative, and there will now be a hearing on a Louisiana law that is similar to another law that was struck down by a different Supreme Court that requires admitting privileges for doctors for abortion clinics. Now, Justice Kavanaugh gives every indication that he will vote the way conservatives normally vote on these votes, despite the fact that he indicated to Susan Collins of Maine that Roe v. Wade was settled law. What's your take on where this stands?
I think it remains to be seen how Justice Kavanaugh will rule on this Louisiana case. It certainly will have the effect of leaving the state with one abortion provider, which is a considerable setback for those who favor pro-choice. However, when you look at Justice Kavanaugh's history of jurisprudence on the D.C. Circuit, there have been times when he has very much satisfied conservatives in terms of his rulings. There are others when he's disappointed them, in one case on Obamacare, in another on a case involving an abortion that was sought by a non-documented immigrant. So I think on the one hand, Justice Kavanaugh has it's in his interest to keep his head down right now and not bring more attention and more controversy to himself personally as well as to the court generally.
The book is The Education of Brett Kavanaugh. Thanks to Robin Pogrebin, who's collaborated with Kate Kelly on this good book. And we will be back after this time out with more Talk Louisiana.